Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. NATO is on the verge of a major military escalation against Russia. NATO is thinking the unthinkable. We explain why. Also, RT is again in the news. Western elites are obsessed with RT. We must be doing something right. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Goggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Istanbul, we have Tariq Cyril Ahmad. He is a historian and political commentator. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with George in Budapest. Over the last week, there has been intense discussion about Ukraine using long-range missiles, obviously Western-made, NATO-made, to be used against the interior of Russia. What was wrong about that story, and as I suggested in my introduction, this is a NATO strategy. This is what NATO wants to do. And essentially, you have NATO-backed troops in Russia proper today in the Kursk area. There's no denying that NATO is at war with Russia, and that is the doublespeak that we keep getting from Western elites to this day, is that, no, we're not part of the conflict. Well, George, the Rubicon has been crossed. Go ahead.
Well, you're absolutely right, Peter. And it is quite extraordinary that the NATO countries, particularly in the United Kingdom, but in many parts of Europe, are just gung-ho and thinking, yeah, we can take this additional step because Putin is bluffing. I mean, we don't have to worry about anything that Putin has to say. And it is very, very strange because earlier in the week, Putin had issued a very explicit statement. Now, there have been Russian leaders currently who tend to just shoot their mouths off and make all sorts of threatening declarations. But Putin has never done that. He's always been quite measured in anything that he says. Here, he was very specific. He said that if you take this step, what you call allowing Ukraine to use your missiles, which is a misnomer, because essentially it's you who will be using these missiles. It's you. Ukraine cannot use these missiles by themselves. Ukraine needs all this, the satellite technology, the GPS targeting, everything that's only the NATO countries can provide that. So therefore, if you do take this step, it means essentially NATO is at war with Russia, and we will then act accordingly. That was very specific. And so for the Western countries, particularly in the United Kingdom, where five former UK defense secretaries today issued a statement, give Ukraine these storm shadows immediately, it means that there's a complete lunacy that is gripping the West. They seem to have got into this habit of fighting off these small, feeble powers that who can't hit back. After all the whacking Iraq or whacking Syria or whacking Panama, Haiti, whoever, and they think that the same thing applies to Russia. Oh, we don't have to take anything they say. He's just bluffing. So we can just go ahead and do whatever we want to do. And the remarkable thing is that they don't have a plan B. Well, what if Russia isn't bluffing? Then what are you going to do? What's your plan then? They have no idea beyond that.
Let's take a look at President Putin's words here. The move, which meaning the giving the Ukrainians access to these long-range missiles, which George has rightly pointed out, cannot be used without NATO assistance. This move would, quote, change the very nature of the conflict and would mean NATO and Russia were at war. This is still very plain speaking here. The president went on to say that he warned that Russia would take appropriate decisions. Tariq, I mean, this is pretty clear stuff. These are single syllable words that are being used here. I mean, I don't know what there's to be misunderstood. Go ahead.
Well, if people in the West, or I should say if the so-called elites in the West, were still reasonably normal and had normal intelligence working, and I mean like the intelligence that makes your head work, then these words should suffice, right? Absolutely, and maybe they have for now. But the problem is that, as George also pointed out, they have gotten into the bad habit of mistaking continued Russian restraint, which has saved us up until now from escalating to World War III, for a message that means that Russia will never hit back at them under any circumstances, even if they get that closely involved in directly attacking it from Ukrainian territory, deep into its own territory, right? This is what we are talking about here. That is totally insane. Maybe the message that Putin sent out has got through. I would add one thing, which is, I think the thing that is saving the world right now is that the Russian leadership makes a distinction which is very important, and this is my guess, and that's between they can be at war with us if they choose to do so, but how we respond to that is our decision, right? That, I think, is the position of the Russian leadership. What they have told us, and I'm thinking here also of a statement that Dmitry Peskov, the speaker of Putin, made on the 11th of September, what they have told us is there will be a response, right? There will be a response. But they have also actually left it open what kind of response there will be. So they have various options. I personally think a likely one is, if the West finally takes this step, is that they will arm the West's opponents in the rest of the world. And they will not only arm them with Russian weapons, which would be one step, they will, and this has also been alluded to by them, they will arm them with know-how. They will tell them how these weapons are made. You can add to that all the know-how that Russia has access to via its connections to China, North Korea, Iran, and so on. If all of this is made available to opponents of the West, say in the Middle East, then these can inflict a very painful price, a very painful cost on the UK, on the USA, on France.
Because they're very, very, they're very, very vulnerable. As George pointed out, basically, these are not your powers. And when these minor powers are upgraded with technology, then they become very fierce. Okay. George, explain to me, you know, I'm just a talk show host. How is giving Ukraine these missiles under American and NATO guidance, how is that helping Ukraine?
Well, of course, it isn't helping Ukraine, because the various numbers that we're getting for the scale of the casualties so far are just staggering. I mean, they're just mind-boggling on both sides. But what's really going on here is this NATO strategy of keeping the war going. They don't really have any end goal. If you were to ask any NATO leader, well, okay, what's your end game here? What would you settle for? What would you claim as something, a result that is achievable and doable and would secure your interests? They wouldn't be able to answer. They just say, we need to stop Putin. We need to prevent Putin from winning, because if Putin wins, then he conquers Europe. And that's really the problem, that the NATO strategy is, well, let's keep this war going. And that's really the problem that we have here, which is that NATO can do this. I mean, if Ukraine is willing to do this, Ukraine is willing to sacrifice thousands upon thousands of its own people, then the war can be, you know, just indefinitely extended. And that's all really NATO wants. NATO just wants to be in this position that whatever Russia achieves in the Donbass, they can keep lobbing missiles into Russia and keep raising the cost for Russia and say, hey, look, you wanted security. The last thing you've got is security. And so that's why it's such a dangerous situation, because NATO has no end game, no final end goal in sight, they can just do this and say, hey, look, we're inflicting pain on Russia.
You know, Vitaly, one of the problems here is that, you know, I'm looking at the three of us here right now, we're all children of the Cold War. And what we had, how we got through the Cold War, the conflict between the Soviet Union, its satellites, and the West, the United States and its satellites, was deterrence. And deterrence works when both sides believe in deterrence. And one of the problems we have right now, it makes it extremely dangerous, kind of echoing some of the things that George says, is that the West does no longer believes in that. Russia does. That's a recipe for disaster.
I think you're right. I would add one thing. We also got through the Cold War because we were damn lucky. Even deterrence as such, you know, we needed divine intervention to survive as a species. We know about several incidents where really only luck saved us. That was 1962 was one, 1983 was another one. I won't go into the details, but this idea that people have that the Cold War was perfectly managed, that these elites on both sides had things under control all the time, it's completely wrong. We also got through because we were lucky, and if it had gone on much longer, sooner or later, we would have run out of luck, right? So if we start a new Cold War, this is going to happen. But the other thing I would like to add is that the West has, as we know, pursued this proxy war with the acknowledged aim to inflict what they call a strategic defeat on Russia. They want to demote Russia in the international system. That's the idea, right? And now they've reached the point where this has obviously not worked. And what is so terrible that they're not shying back from going even further. They're going into a space where Russia's nuclear deterrence does come into play, as the Russians have warned them very rationally several times. Let me add one point about your prior question, is why is the West doing this? I think George is absolutely right with his analysis. I would add something else. I think the West has a double gain here. One is try to make this war endless and bleed Russia. That's the idea. They don't notice they're bleeding themselves, meanwhile. But the other is, if the war is to be lost, then they want Ukraine to go first and acknowledge that. Ukraine is supposed to throw in the towel. And one way to do this is let Ukraine shoot these missiles even deeper into Russia, let the Russians hit back at Ukraine, because that they definitely will. And when the Ukrainians absorb that lesson, let the Ukrainians finally sue for peace, because then those Western politicians can throw up their hand and say, we have always said we will support you to the end. But if you want it to end, fine. So there is a double strategy here. It's also about a possible exit from this lost war, from this lost proxy war, for Western elites.
I agree with you, but the problem is I don't think these same NATO elites will ever see another opportunity to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. Well, I don't think they're going to give up. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
What is Bharat? Is it a travel ad? Is it a Bollywood poster? Is it the deepest yoga center in the world? Or is it something deeper, more complex, multifaceted? Let's talk without cliches. Let's talk Bharat.
نشكر السلطات الأوكرانية لبيعنا هذا السلاح سوف نستخدمه ضد إسرائيل
الله أكبر
How can it be that arms are shipped to the Middle East from a country whose top officials constantly complain about shortages of ammunition and military equipment?
Зброя для України, боєприпаси для України, нові оборонні системи для України.
هلا اللي رح نعمله رح نتصل بواحد من تجار السلاح بمنطقة البقاع لحتى يجي يحكي لنا نصور نحن وياه مقابلة يجي يخبرنا بالضبط شو الوضع السلاح الأوكراني هل في سلاح أوكراني عنا ولا لا ومن وين عم يجي
Why are weapons from Ukraine spreading all over the world? Who turned this country into a major arms hub?
We'll continue to bolster Ukraine's armed forces by rushing them the capabilities that they need to defend their country.
Everyone knows very well that we don't sell bananas, pineapples, or any kind of children's toys. We sell weapons. Yes, we're also known in the world as arms dealers. But we must not be ashamed of that.
Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we're discussing some real news. George, you're a frequent guest on RT. Tariq, you're a frequent guest and you're a very, very popular and prolific writer. this news outlet again is in the news, okay? Well, we like to report the news. We don't always like to be the center of the news, but this is what's happening. George, you and I have talked at length about the phenomenon called the Russiagate hoax. By our determination, we're about 3.0. We could be more nuanced, maybe 5.0. I'm not really sure. But, you know, what's going on here? I mean, RT has been banned in the West overall. It's not on YouTube. We have this new iteration of Russiagate where some right-wing influencers were somehow, quote-unquote, paid off or, you know, what we still don't know a lot of the details about that. That's why I don't want to waste a lot of time on it. But what is the point here? I mean, it seems to me, in my humble opinion, this is focused, the obsession they have with RT is the obsession with their own publics having access to other points of view. It's the attack on Western publics, not on RT, not on Russia. George.
I agree with you, Peter, because when you look at RT, the RT basically is Westerners appearing on a platform provided by Russia. So there's, you know, they keep talking about the propaganda from the Kremlin. There is no propaganda from the Kremlin. I mean, because everybody who appears on RT actually lives in the West and is a dissident voice in the West. So it's just simply the presentation of alternative points of view to the Western public. And it's that which is in the crosshairs of government. I mean, and this is of a piece with the attack on Twitter or the attack on Durov and Telegram, which is the suppression of all dissident opinion. And interestingly enough, this horrible creature, Jamie Rubin, who is the head of this State Department's Global Engagement Center, he gave this news conference last week, and he explained why this attack on RT. He said, well, we're losing the war in the public opinion of throughout the world.
Since you mentioned it, I'll read the quote and I'll go right back to you. This is a quote from the State Department. RT is one of the reasons the world has been not fully supportive of Ukraine. That is from the U.S. State Department. Keep going, George.
That's exactly. So we've gone out of our way to tell the world this how terrible Russia is and how we must all rally behind the United States and NATO in this proxy war in Ukraine, and the rest of the world isn't buying it. And why isn't the rest of the world buying it? RT. So what this new attack on RT is about is we have to really go after the rest of the world and to tell them, you need to ban RT. And that's really what that's about. You need to ban RT. Well, why do you need to do it? And then they come up with these ludicrous explanations, laughable explanations. Well, they've got the cyber capability, and so they're engaged in intelligence.
Well, what does that mean, George? We have access
to the internet? And interesting enough,
access to the internet. That's a cyber capability.
The
criticism here, I suppose these State Department officials have to use a VPN to watch it. Okay, I'm not really sure how they watch it here. But if you were to, I invite viewers of this program, watch an entire day of RT. Look at all the news bulletins and all that. There's no one coherent focused, targeted message. All we get is George's pointed out is that people disagree a lot. There's a lot of disagreement on RT itself, okay? There's no uniform message. Just as George said, we have Westerners coming on and criticizing policies of their own governments and global institutions, but there's no one single critique. Go ahead, Tariq.
You know, I think you're both absolutely right about the way in which RT is a platform, really, for Western dissident voices. And in a way, you know, if you know Soviet history, late Soviet history, you could say that RT is a Tamizdat of the West now, right? This is how Russia actually facilitates Western dissidents to speak back to the West. That is one thing that irks them. And of course, George is also right that this is part of a larger pattern. I would add the attack on TikTok as well, right? So they are attacking everything that provides a platform for alternative points of views. It's very, very clear. The other thing that I found really interesting about this announcement is specifically the point about the global south, right? Obviously, this is a very colonialist mindset, right? Africans or other people in the global south do not have what Ukrainians always have in Western discourse, namely agency. They don't choose to watch RT. Somehow RT is manipulating them, right? This tells you a lot about the way they see the global south, namely in extremely arrogant terms. And what is interesting, secondly, about this is that they apply the same logic to their own publics, right, at home. So they treat their Western publics with the same arrogance, with the same basically colonialist arrogance that they treat the publics of the global South. The only ones in the imagination of these Western elites who have any right to actually make their own choices are they themselves, right? Neither in their own societies nor outside in the global South can anybody else be left to their own devices to actually figure out what they want to hear, listen to, or watch. Now, I don't think this will prevail. I think this is so ridiculous that, once again, I think this is a cell phone, a massive cell phone. It won't actually work.
You know, George, it's interesting if we look at the timeline that's going on. This attack, recent attack by the DOJ on RT comes when Kamala Harris's poll numbers weren't as good as everybody was hoping on the political left. Next month, Russia will host a very significant BRICS summit. It's getting a lot of excitement. A lot of people are going to be showing up. It's going to be a big deal, as they say here. The timing of this attack on RT can't be a coincidence.
No, I don't think so. I think it is tied to the election. They're clearly very anxious about getting Kamala Harris across the finish line. The polling numbers are not great. And this is a part of it. This is part of the somehow Russia is interfering in elections. Russia is somehow preventing Kamala Harris from winning. The Russians are preventing the Americans seeing the glory of Kamala Harris. And there's no question this is absolutely a part of it. But it is the issue is that it's a massive failure on the part of the United States to persuade the rest of the world. And it's a sore point that you know, they have all these votes in the United Nations, and then they keep demanding, you have to impose sanctions on Russia, you have to impose sanctions, you got to stop doing business. And no one's buying, and they're continuing to do business with Russia. And so this is a real feeling that we've got to do something. And incidentally, when Rubin was speaking, Rubin was explicit in threatening. He was issuing threats against the global south that, you know, if you don't play ball with us, we're going to make life very, very painful for you. You know, you see all these instruments we have, financial sanctions, economic sanctions, we can start unleashing the Justice Department against you. He said this explicitly. So, you know, you better play ball with us and start cutting RT off.
So, Tariq, George is absolutely right. All their toolbox, as it were. But this is an admission that they can't win an argument.
Yes, that's very important, I think, because look, in Western philosophical thinking, right, it's an extremely old argument. It goes back to one of Plato's dialogues, where they explain that the best rhetoric, the best debating technique, is to have the better case. No tricks will replace that. And they are coming up against this, right? They are actually the ones deploying an enormous amount of very, very resource propaganda around the world. But it doesn't add up. So their opponents, including those who speak on RT, but not only, have the better cases. And this begins to tell. That's what they are coming up against. And that's why they are so frustrated. Let me add one point as we are talking about their threats. What I found particularly ominous about what they said is that they alleged that RT is de facto an intelligence service or does intelligence work. Now, remember the Assange case that was all built on the same lie, that Assange was not an investigative journalist and a publisher, but an intelligence agent. And that's how they punished him for almost two decades de facto until they finally removed the clause from him because they couldn't get him to the USA in the end. But this particular link to claim that journalism is somehow intelligence, they're bringing that into position, I think, to use it against more individuals, the way they used it against Assange.
I agree. You know, in Georgia, in the last couple of news cycles, we had an interview with Victoria Nuland, essentially admitting what the three of us and much of our audience knew, that the United States and particularly the UK torpedoed a peace negotiation early on in the conflict in Ukraine. We were all called conspiracy theorists. We were called nutters. We were called puppets. Everything that you can possibly say is a slur. But we were right. Again, we were right. Okay, go ahead.
We were right, but of course, no one really acknowledges that any more than anyone acknowledged that who the people who are right about the Iraq invasion being a debacle, that Saddam Hussein didn't have weapons of mass destruction, but the people who urged that invasion were rewarded with lucrative media gigs, you know, think tank jobs.
It's Cheney mania in the United States,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, and now Kamala Harris is boasting that she's getting the endorsement of Dick Cheney and Liz Cheney. No, I mean, and what Nuland did there is admit that you sabotaged a possible peace deal. That was, you know, more than 2 years ago. You sabotaged it. You know, all these lives could have been saved. And really, there's been barely any attention paid in the Western media. So, but when Keir Starmer goes to Washington, somehow the media present it as, well, this is a really an important step towards achieving peace in Ukraine. No, they're talking about continuing the killing, continuing the escalation, and somehow they present that as the road to peace when there was a possibility of peace, and they and Nuland, Johnson, and the rest of them sabotaged it.
All right, gentlemen, we've covered a lot of ground here. I want to thank my guests in Istanbul and in Budapest. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.